Well, have you ever had that feeling where you walk into a room, you're looking for something, but by the time you get there, you can't remember what you were looking for? Hi, Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Joining us now, Daniel Levitin, a neuroscientist, cognitive psychologist. His new book, Successful Aging, A Neuroscientist Explores the Power and Potential of Our Lives. So he talks about how to make the most of your life as you get older. He also says that memory problems of forgetting what you were in the room for is not just something that happens to older people. Young people forget those things, too. I hope you'll join in as we talk with him. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. As you've gotten older, have you felt your age? What's kept you feeling full of life and excited to wake up every day? 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org. Daniel Levitin, thanks for taking time to be with us today. Really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me back on WPR.
Yeah, well, it's great to have you with us. It does seem like in our culture that we don't have a very positive outlook on getting older. We expect our health and our memory to decline. We're expecting to kind of wind down. Can you talk about that? did that influence you to write this book?
It very much influenced me. We're dealing with a narrative that hasn't caught up with the scientific research and the reality that we're living healthier and longer. And older ages are not just a time of decline. It's not like once you're 60, it's just less of everything. It's a unique developmental stage in which there are some improvements and some actual increases in certain skills alongside challenges that any developmental stage might have.
You know, something you established early in the book I thought was interesting, and it's not that everybody ages the same. Some people appear to get older faster, others appear to keep their young spirit for much longer. Why does that happen?
Well, it's a bunch of different reasons, and of course, some of it's under our control and some of it's not. If you had a very difficult life with a lot of trauma, maybe repetitive head injuries, a lot of illnesses, that's not under your control, perhaps, and you're not going to age as well as someone else. But there's a lot that's under our control, which has to do with our mindset. Although you can't control what life does to you, you can control how you respond to it.
Yeah. You know, this whole business about memory, impairment doesn't just happen as we get older, does it?
Well, certainly there are some age-related memory decrements that we see in some people. In fact, that's a hallmark of Alzheimer's. But Alzheimer's is rarer than you think, and it's not inevitable. And as you've pointed out in the introduction, 20-year-olds make memory errors all the time. They lose their cell phones. They lose their keys. 70-year-olds lose their cell phones and keys. But what differs is the stories we tell ourselves. So the 20-year-old says, I'm not getting enough sleep, or I partied too much last night. The 70-year-old says, this is doom. This is Alzheimer's. Same behavior, different story.
Yeah. Well, this whole business, and this has happened to me. I go somewhere to get something, and I saw a YouTube, just extremely funny, to me anyway, piece about somebody going from one room to another and forgetting something, and then they forgot. They spend a whole bunch of time forgetting what they were doing, and it was really funny, and I've kind of laughed because I laugh at myself once in a while when I forget it. But some of that has to do with short-term memory, right? We got different kinds of memory.
We do, and short-term memory is your current plans and goals, and it's very subject, vulnerable to distraction, especially as we get older. You get distracted by things, but that happens to children, too. There's this sort of middle period between late adolescence and middle age where you're not as distractible. But it's a lot of that, and it's that older adults have more on their minds, but It's also, you know, how you're thinking about things. Einstein reportedly would get lost around campus at Princeton, even in his younger years. His mind was always somewhere else.
Yeah. And we only have so many, if you want to think about short-term memory as a slot, we only have so many slots in our brain for short-term memory, if I'm not mistaken.
Absolutely right. So you can really pay attention to just two or three things at once. So say you're in your kitchen and you decide to go to the bedroom to get a sweater or something. And on the way, you're thinking about a friend of yours who's having a crisis. You're trying to remember whether you paid your taxes on time, and you're wondering what you're going to have for lunch. Those are three things. You get to the bedroom, you forget you wanted a sweater.
Carolyn in Grand Marais, Minnesota has something for us. Let's go there. Carolyn, hi.
Hi. There was a study that I read about at Stanford University, a fairly large study, and it said that there are three ages where your body chemistry changes totally. It's a new study, at 35, 65, and 78. And I'm wondering, okay, either if it's a chemical issue, is there something you can do about this? And have you read about that, and what do you think?
Well, so for one thing, whenever we hear reports like this, it's important to bear in mind we're talking about averages and aggregates. And in some cases, there's no one person who actually hits the target. There may be no 35-year-old, but there might be 30-year-olds and 40-year-olds. But yes, moving beyond that, the idea is that your neurochemistry changes, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. Your body chemistry changes, and there are things you can do about it. Meditation can help restore your body chemistry, and as can therapy or medication, not just meditation with a T, but medication with a C. In fact, restoring our brain's natural chemistry to its regular state is part of the forefront of treating people over the age of 75 with things like Prozac.
You have a list of things in your book that talk about how we can age successfully. I wanted to talk about some of them. One that surprised me was your suggestion that we not retire, or at least if we do, we take on other things, volunteer jobs or whatever, something like that. Maybe you can discuss that a little more.
Well, let's unpack it. There's a few things. One is when people retire, they typically have their social circles shrink because most jobs require that you interact with others. And that interaction is neurally protective. The other thing is when we retire, we lose a sense of purpose and meaning often. And that sense of purpose and meaning are helpful for the brain and the body, feeling respected and valued. And thirdly, there's a certain amount of stress associated with having a job, even if you're self-employed, maybe especially if you're self-employed.
Yeah.
Having to get up at a certain time and having deliverables. And as long as your job isn't tremendously stressful to the point that it sickens you or dangerous, then having those reasons to get up in the morning release enough cortisol and adrenaline to keep your immune system functioning well. You lose that, you quickly, oftentimes, take a very rapid downward spiral.
Yeah. And I guess I know people who have, I know a friend, in fact, I was with them last night at the Super Bowl, watching the Super Bowl, who his wife always said, well, nobody was ever more fit for retirement than Mike. And then I have, and he has thrived in his retirement. And I know other people that just went almost immediately downhill.
Well, so the key is if you retire from something, retire to something, as you say. And that something could be volunteer work, philanthropy. It could be holding a book club. I just ran into my 87-year-old junior high school principal who has started a book club, and they get together once a week. You have to be 80 to be in the club, and they read these books and they talk about them. They have vigorous debates. This isn't actually a job, but it's what he's doing, and it's working.
You know, one thing about your example goes along, I think, with one of the other things that you talk about in the book, which is look forward, don't look back. You know, you might look, I would bet that that 87-year-old guy probably looks forward to those meetings.
He does. And in fact, I interviewed a lot of people who were in their 80s and 90s who are, have their eye on what's ahead, not what's behind. It's not just a matter of not resting on your laurels if you're somebody like Judy Collins or Carla Herrera, 104-year-old painter. It's a matter of not wanting to steep yourself in regrets and woulda, shoulda, coulda, because that kind of thinking can lead to depression.
This whole business about reminiscing and looking back, I think that there can be some depressing incidences when you do something like that. I mean, I've thought about things myself. Oh, I wish I had done that instead of the other thing I did do and so forth. But what about reminiscing? It can not promote health.
Well, I'd make a distinction here between reminiscing and ruminating. So,
okay.
You know, reminiscing, thinking about the good times you had with people, even a certain reminisce of, oh, I wish I had done that. I wish I'd gone to Australia when I had the chance. Those kinds of things can motivate you to behave better towards people or to travel. So they can be motivating. But rumination, where you're just wallowing in regret and despair and, hating yourself, that's not good for you.
Yeah. Have you seen that a lot?
Yeah, a lot of people do that. Well, at all ages, especially moody teenagers.
Yeah, I've got a moody, well, she's not moody very much, but once in a while when she's got an assignment in physics or something that she's not getting, she gets a little moody. But otherwise, I think she's pretty good for the most part. But one of the things that I, in your book, I would just to remind everybody, it's A Successful Aging. Daniel Levitin, our guest today, one thing that seems like a simple one, but maybe we often forget, is don't think of yourself as old.
That's right.
Some people say age is just a number.
That's right. Well, I mean, I think one needs to take prudent precautions. If you're 90 years old and you've never climbed Everest, that may not be a reasonable goal. But, Ben Sidran, a great Wisconsin jazz pianist, is going like gangbusters, doing the best work of his career, I think. You've got Clint Eastwood, who just released his new movie at age 89, and he told me over the summer, his explanation for why he's able to keep on going. He says, "I don't let the old man in."
Yeah. And there's always talk about how you think about yourself. I honestly not sure how I think about myself. I think about myself as being a lot younger than I actually am. Is that a good thing?
Again, with prudent precautions, yeah. That's what I keep hearing over and over again from older adults. They look in the mirror and they say, I see the wrinkles, but I don't feel this age. I still feel like I'm 20 in many respects.
How do you feel about yourself?
Well, it's funny. I was in an elevator the other day with three people. All the buttons were pushed, and this was a high rise with 40 floors. And we're looking around, and somebody said, by way of explanation, it was this way when I got in, so I wouldn't blame them. And I said, 50 years ago, that would have been me pushing all the buttons.
Somebody had pushed all the buttons.
Yeah. And we got a laugh out of it. And I realized, there are parts of me that are still that 10-year-old. There are parts of me that are the 30-year-old, and the great thing about our consciousness, and uniquely we have this of all species, is that we have the ability to tie these disparate parts of ourselves and our lives into a continuous narrative, and we can look at old pictures and meet old friends, and it's all us. It's a single, unitary us.
Yeah. You know, I should have asked you this right off the bat, but your book is very readable. It's engaging. Talk about how you've organized it and what your book's all about.
Well, there are three parts to the book. The first is the science of aging, starting in the womb. We start aging then, and we age the day we're born, and we continue to do so, hopefully. The second part of the book is some practical advice that people can follow at any age, maybe starting around age 20, to tilt the balance in their favor, to be productive and happy and through their 20s and 30s and on beyond, in 80s and 90s and beyond. And the third part of the book is kind of a look at new technologies and medicines that are on the horizon, and a kind of summing up. And, you know, I wrote it for the average person who is not a scientist, certainly not a neuroscientist, and wants to make sense of a lot of the really captivating and exciting new research that's been done in the last 10 years and that hasn't trickled down to the average person. And at the same time, I tried to write it for my scientific colleagues who may have only seen pieces of the story and want to see it all drawn together in one place.
Yeah. Well, it's certainly engaging. Vivian in Green Bay will give you a chance. Hi, Vivian.
Hello. I have an 87-year-old longtime friend. Help her out. It's necessary for her to be leaving her two-story home, maybe even into assisted living. And as we discussed it one day, she said, "It feels like I'm preparing to die." And it didn't occur to me right away, but as I mulled it over, I thought, that's wrong. That's something wrong there. And next time I got together with her, I said, "You're really preparing to live a different life, but you are preparing to live."
It's another type of life.
Yeah, it is, Vivian.
Yeah.
And Vivian, thank you for pushing back on that. Now it's going to be up to her whether she embraces this as an exciting new phase or not. But I've seen people, my own grandmother, move into assisted living facilities. And now one of my favorite professors, Roger Shepherd, who just turned 92 this year, his birthday was a few days ago, he's gone into assisted living, but he's just full of projects and still emailing his friends and colleagues, and his wife is there with him. I hope he goes for another 10 or 15 years. he needs some help with some things. He's recognized that. But as Dylan Thomas advised, he's not going gentle into that good night.
Yeah, and you know, sometimes folks react very positively when they – one of the things, I think, is because you're reintroduced to a lot of people.
That's right, and people who understand your station in life and your situation.
Oh, Vivian, thanks. That was a good on you for pushing back on that a little bit. Appreciate it. Walter in West Bend will give you a chance. Hi, Walter.
Hey, how you doing, Larry? Good to talk to you.
Good to talk to you.
I'm reminded with the way you guys are talking about one of my favorite musicians, Jimmy Buffett, who has a song that seems to emulate the lifestyle of the of I'm growing older, but I'm not growing up.
Yeah.
Right. And you know, sort of changes in latitudes, changes in attitudes as well. You can change your attitude without changing latitude, as the message. And Buffett's going strong. He's still performing, and I agree.
He's getting up there in age, too.
He is. I saw him perform just a few months ago. He was terrific.
Well, you know, I don't know if many people realize this, but older people often need just as much sleep as younger people, and sleep deprivation in the ages is partially responsible for cognitive decline, is it not?
It is, or at least for the illusion of cognitive decline. Older adults typically get less sleep, but they need just as much as the rest of us, 8 or 9 hours a night, consistently. And one night of disrupted sleep can impair your memory when you're over 70. It can impair your memory for up to 2 weeks. So what seems like cognitive decline is really just sleep deprivation.
Oh. Any advice on what to do when health ailments are impeding you from changes?
Well, I think it's important to have a good relationship with your doctor to figure out what's possible and modify your expectations. It might be good to see a therapist if you're depressed by the limitations, or an occupational therapist who can help you to recover some function or, again, reset appropriate goals. And it's also important to have a conversation now, however old you are, with your loved ones and your doctor about what kind of life you want to have. In other words, would you rather live longer and perhaps be out of it for some of that time, or would you rather live life fully? There are treatment compromises that come along all the time. What's your level of risk there?
That's probably a pretty good note to end on. Daniel, thank you so much for the book, and thank you so much for being with us today. I really appreciate it, and I hope we have a chance to talk again. Thank you.
I do, too. Thank you, Larry.
Daniel Levitin is the author of Successful Aging, A Neuroscientist Explores the Power and Potential of Our Lives. And just a quick interview with him. We didn't have a chance to get into as much detail as perhaps I would have liked, but that's the way it goes sometimes on the show. Tomorrow at this time, I hope you'll tune in when we'll be talking about sports, this time Wisconsin's hockey history from the beginnings to the greatest moments. Thank you so much for listening, and please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller. A contentious impeachment trial.